I have always been a massive fan of the horror genre. I avidly listen to ghost stories year-round, but until I moved into this spooky house, I have never had anything paranormal happen to me. I wasn't a believer, and I always assumed I wasn't a sensitive person, which may have been true until I had a body and life-altering experience. Something I won't get into here, but I always believed this changed and helped me become more sensitive, because that's when things started happening. From the first week I moved into this house, strange and scary things happened. I never had nightmares before. On the contrary, my dreams have always been surprisingly pleasant. That is until a few days of being in this house. A bit of context. I previously described the place as the third house on a dead-end road. The road in front of the house had a wide-off section into a dirt road that went to the right, and then there was a paved road that went to the left. If you went up this driveway, the house would be to your left, with a large yard in between the driveway and the house. To your right is a vast, detached garage, the kind that you could fit a semi-truck in. Getting back to the story, I believe it was the third day I was at the house. My roommate had a large basement room, and my room was upstairs. I'm upstairs in my room sleeping, and I have this dream. Well, it's more like a nightmare. I'm not actually in the action itself. It's more like I'm watching a movie. In front of me was this oversized, detached garage, and in it is some sort of thing, like a witch or a ghoul of some kind. It had tattered black clothes hanging off of it, a large brimmed dark hat, and it was floating slowly past the front of the garage, with the tips of its toes dragging on the gravel. I don't know how scary that sounds to some people, but besides the image, it was the feeling that I got from this ghoul-like creature that terrified me the most. I felt like there was no hope in the world, and the only thing I could do was lay down and die. Like any average person, I have had my struggles with depression at one point or another, but I never felt this kind of despair. When it got to about the center of the garage, it stopped, and with lightning speed, snapped its head up and looked right at me. I wasn't there in the dream per se, but I felt like this thing knew I was watching. Its face, twisted and distorted. Its smile was horrifying. It looked at me with this look in its dark eyes as if it were happy to have a new plaything. That's the moment I woke up screaming. My roommate was lucky to be such a heavy sleeper. I've never had a nightmare like that, let alone one that I woke up screaming to. That was the first nightmare of many more disturbing dreams to come, though. When my dreams didn't have me questioning my sanity, all the noises and things I would see had me challenging myself. There was what I believed to be a residual haunting in the hallway. I always heard someone rushing down the hallway. 3 times, my roommate stood in the doorway, talking to me, when I would barely see a tall person step behind him as if they were walking behind him to get into one of the other bedrooms. Each time, I looked at him and said, "Who is that?" And he would look at me like I was crazy. Then he would search the house and find absolutely nothing. One night, when I was half asleep, I stepped out of my room and flipped on the hallway light to see a few feet down the hallway to the bathroom. There are 2 switches at each end of the hallway. They are old controls that clack loud when you flip them off and on. When I'm half asleep, I'm the kind of person who hangs their head and can barely keep their eyes open. Seconds after I flip the switch and walk down the hallway, the lights start flashing on and off in the hallway. Just a steady clack, clack, clack. Just off, then on, then off, then on. I assumed being half asleep it was my roommate messing around. So I continued to the bathroom with my head hung and eyes barely open, not bothering to look up, and said, "Hilarious, Mike, go to bed." I went into the bathroom, shut the door, and sat down to pee. Then I started to wake up a bit and realize I didn't hear my roommate giggle the way he did when he would mess with me, nor did I hear him say anything or even walk away. I just heard silence. The light stopped clacking the moment I shut the bathroom door. After I washed my hands a few moments later, I stepped into the living room to look around. No roommate, just silence. Mind you, and this is an old house that's not well insulated. You can hear every slight creak. I asked him the next day, but he denied it. I believed him because usually he liked to laugh about it later, and then he would tease me about it. Another notable thing is that the bedroom I had used to be his grandmother's bedroom. I had never met his grandmother or even seen a picture of her. So this ghoul-like creature, or maybe an army of these creatures, started to taunt me at night. Every time I would be about to fall asleep, there'd be loud bangs on the wall that would wake me up, or something would be thrown across my room like a shoe. This creature or creatures were trying to break me by keeping me up for days. I really felt as if I was going to lose my mind. My roommate was not a sensitive person, and for some reason did not believe me. I'm not the kind of person who makes up stories, so I assumed he didn't want to believe me because he was scared as well. One night, before I was about to break down in tears from not sleeping because of the noise and the fear, I managed to fall asleep. For how long, I don't know, but I woke up sometime during the night to a scuffling sound. The sound you make when your feet are sliding across the carpet. The first thing I saw when I opened my eyes at the end of my bed was a silhouette of an old lady. The clearest features I could make out were the ends of her silk nightgown down to her slippers. The upper half of her body was kind of shadowed. Normally, if I woke up to someone standing at the end of my bed, I might freak out, but the feeling I got from her was warm. It was like she was talking to me in my head. I didn't hear a different voice, but somehow, I felt like she was saying to me, "It's okay, I'm here, just go to sleep now." And I felt the sensation I've never felt before. It was as if someone had taken an electric blanket and pulled it over me, very slowly, all the way up to my chin. Somehow, I felt warm and safe, and I did what she said, and I went to sleep. After that night, the noises and the banging didn't keep me up anymore, although strange things did still happen. I didn't care if my roommate would believe me or not. I told him the next day about how the entire week, whatever was in the house refused to let me sleep and was trying to make me go crazy. Luckily, he looked at me more concerned than like I was crazy. Then I described to him the old woman in my room, who I think saved me from the dark entity. I described her silk nightgown and her slippers and how she was short and hunched over slightly. My roommate looked at me with pure astonishment. Then I described how when I woke up, I heard her slippers sliding across a carpet. That's when his eyes almost fell out of his head. He said, "You described my grandmother perfectly. She had trouble walking, so she always scuffled her feet across the carpet. Then, he said she died in your room." That fact hit me like a ton of bricks. Small things started to make sense. Like when I was in my room and my cat would be looking at a specific corner near my room. He would be purring and stretching his paw out as if someone were telling him what a good little mitten he was. The way he would be moving his head and reacting, it was as if there was someone there cooing over him. So thank you to my roommate's deceased grandma for helping me regain mental clarity and for being sweet to my little kitten prince. Now back onto a darker note. The last story I will share is on Christmas. Like I said, after the grandmother incident, things were just a little bit less stressful. I don't know what kind of spiritual power his grandmother was or had, but maybe there were possibly other good entities on the property, I'm not entirely sure, but the bad ones were angry that the grandmother had intervened for sure. They made it very clear on Christmas. Why Christmas, you ask? I honestly could not tell you. Maybe it's because of the joy of the season. The season that brings the kind of happiness people feel to be near their loved ones and receive gifts and eat food and all that good stuff. Christmas Eve is when things got bad. First, I was in the kitchen cleaning and cooking when the sink turned on by itself. I'm not the kind of person who thinks everything is a ghost or paranormal. I always try to debunk everything before I say I can't explain it. This old house had a very old well pump system. Whenever you turned the water on, you would hear a very distinct click and bump noise that could be heard anywhere in the house. While I was wiping off a counter, I heard that very distinct clicking and bumping noise when I thought to myself, "Where is there water running? I don't have anything in the washer, and no one else is home." Within a few seconds, it took me to think that I heard the sink next to me turn on, full blast all of a sudden. I'll admit, I stood there and stared dumbfounded. Then I definitely let out a few curse words, you get the idea. I slowly walked over to the sink and turned it off. When I asked my roommates how the sink could possibly turn on by itself, he didn't really have an answer. I said maybe I just didn't turn the handle off all the way and it was still building pressure. Maybe that pressure finally built up and released the valve, aka the handle. He said that was impossible. At least with the type of system that it was, it wouldn't be able to do that. There would never be enough pressure. I'm starting to think about other things as well. And then I finally let it sink in that this was probably a paranormal event. I've never seen an inanimate object animate itself the way that that thing did. I think the sink turning on was just a soft warning for what was to come. This dark entity knew the first time it scared the life out of me when it went into my dreams. So that's what it set out to do again. Christmas Eve, I had the most disturbing dream I have ever had in my life. And it still haunts me to think about because it seemed so real. To this day, I haven't told my roommate about it. For a little bit of context, my roommate has a history of depression. His mother took her own life and his father died from cancer a year after. I won't go too far into it, but he turned to hard drugs for quite some time. He's clean now and doing very well in life, but because of his past, I have always been worried that when he gets depressed, that he might try to take his own life, which is just one of the many reasons why I was afraid to ever mention this dream to him. Obviously, telling him about it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to come true. This is how much it disturbs me to think about. In this dream, I woke up in my bed in the morning, and for some reason, the first thing I needed to do was speak to my roommate. When I was lying in bed, I could hear what sounded like a rope twisting back and forth. For some reason in my dream, this didn't really make any sense, and I wasn't suspicious about it at first. I got out of bed, walked down the hallway, through the kitchen, and down into the basement. As I was descending the stairs, the sound of the rope got louder and louder until I turned a corner and there was my roommate, hanging from a rafter. The sound of the rope was so loud, I don't know why in the dream I never covered my ears. As I stared at his body slowly turning towards me, I won't go into too much detail, but his face looked exactly like a face would if someone had hung themselves. Whatever this thing was, this dark entity, it really wanted to destroy me mentally and emotionally. I think it tapped into my subconscious, and it took all the worst things I've experienced or worried about and tried to turn them into nightmares to get back at me because I had almost escaped its grasp. I had a stepfather I was very close with who hung himself, and my roommate is one of the last people that I've ever been very close with. And he was having his own depression issues, and I was worried about him. I think it tried to take these two things and twist them and warp them into a demented way to hurt me mentally because it couldn't get to me physically. I woke up from the dream in a cold sweat, shaking and in tears. My first thought was, what if this wasn't a dream, and he really was down there hanging? As I got out of bed, I knew I didn't want to see it, but I had to. I was shaking uncontrollably as I walked down the hallway. For some context, you can see the driveway area where we parked the cars behind the house through the kitchen window. So, as I walked down the hallway, I hoped so badly his car would be gone, which meant he would be over at his brother's house on Christmas Day. As I poked my head around the corner, I saw his car was gone and I felt an unbelievable amount of relief. That's when I texted him Merry Christmas just to be sure, and he replied with the same. We don't live in that house anymore, thankfully. His younger brother took over the house and started to remodel it, and I honestly found it kind of funny. The way that they laughed at my stories and called me crazy and said I wanted attention. Now his wife is so terrified to be in the house that she practically lives at her mother's house, all the while pretending as if there's nothing going on in the house. We were in the house very briefly before we moved when his brother started to remodel, and this is when my roommate started to believe me. We were in the basement sharing a large room, a week before we moved out, and we thought his brother had left for the evening because it was about 10 p.m. My roommate and his brother had to work early in the morning. Before he had left, he was doing a demo in the bathroom with a sledgehammer to remodel. After we thought he had left, when the banging started, it sounded exactly as if he were still up there with a sledgehammer. Then, we heard running loudly down the hallway. We both assumed he had just brought one of his kids with him. My roommate angrily went upstairs to tell him to go home for the night. He came back down looking shocked, seeing nobody up there. That's when I laughed and I said, "Trust me, there's plenty up there." When I was 8 or 9, I saw something weird on Christmas Eve. Many, many years ago, but I still remember it like yesterday. I still believed in Santa Claus then, as many children do, and I had the usual anxiety and excitement for Santa to leave Christmas presents by the tree. After I went to bed, I had some trouble sleeping with holiday nerves and such. I had finally drifted off when I woke up to soft footsteps somewhere in my room. I automatically assumed it was Santa Claus, and I was scared to see him for fear that he might leave, or his magic would fail. I barely opened one eye and saw this black figure standing over my bed, staring at me. It was tall, probably around 6 foot or so, and it was completely dark. It looked almost blacker than black in a way. I couldn't see any eyes, a mouth, or a nose on it, but I could see the outline of a head, arms, body, and legs. It looked like a big person, so thinking it was Santa, I just tried to close my eyes. It stayed in one spot for maybe 10 or 15 seconds, until it took a few steps closer to me. Then, it leaned in a little bit more, still a few feet away from me. It probably stayed there for another 10 to 15 seconds. Even though I couldn't see a face, I knew it was looking right at me. You get that weird feeling when you know you're being stared at or watched. So I closed my eyes again and waited for a few moments. When I looked back, I think it was gone. I lived in an old house at the time, so the doors and floorboards were squeaky and loud. I heard the footsteps, but I never heard the door open. I never saw this figure again, though I have had some other spooky experiences in this house. I asked my mom if she had heard Santa when he came into my room last night, and she looked confused for a second. Then she played along and assumed I was playing. I know this wasn't a person, and it was not a dream. I also know that spirits and entities are often attracted to lots of excitement and energy, so Christmas would be a perfect time for a ghost to pass through. This happened about 4 or 5 years ago, when I was around 15 years old. It was early Christmas morning, and my sister and her boyfriend had just come over. They were in the kitchen, socializing, drinking coffee or tea, maybe snacking on some stocking stuffers. Typical behavior for us to do before opening presents. Before I say exactly what happened to me, I think I should sort of describe the house's general layout so you can get an idea. When you first come in the front door, there is a short hallway going straight before, being met into the kitchen. If you continue through the kitchen in a straight line, you will walk into the dining room. And then, when you take a left, there's some stairs and the living room. Note, the dining room was mostly empty as we had the dining table inside the kitchen. So we set up the tree and presents in the dining room instead of the living room. Anyways, I was patiently waiting to start opening gifts. So I pulled up a chair next to the tree and sat there for a while with my back turned to the kitchen. While my family was behind me talking and stuff, I was just sitting there, and suddenly, I heard what can only be described as a demon or a devil voice whisper in my left ear. I described it as such because I don't know how else to describe it. I don't think it was the devil himself whispering in my ear, but it also sounded incredibly demonic, if that gives you a better understanding of what it sounded like. Imagine what its voice sounded like if you've ever played video games, watched movies, or something like that where a devil or a demon character speaks. It was a typical, intense bass voice with a hint of distortion or slight lisp. I don't know. It just sounded like gibberish to me. It lasted about 3 solid seconds. It gave me goosebumps at first, but only because I was startled. After that, it was directly in my ear as if I was listening to some ASMR. I almost started to giggle and swatted at my ear as I turned around and looked at my family. As I half turned around, they all stopped and looked at me, wondering what I was laughing at. I see all their expressions turn from smiling to questionable, and then to a straight face in a matter of seconds. They said that my whole face turned a pale white when I realized no one was behind me. I shuddered and asked who was behind me playing noises, and they said that no one was. I thought of the possibility that it was just a joke or a prank, but I'm confident that it wasn't. The kitchen was about 15 feet behind me, and between the time the noise stopped and I turned around, there's no way someone could have run from me to the kitchen without being noticed. That sort of prank is highly random, and wouldn't have made any sense, at least not for anyone in my family. I know most jokes are based on luck and stuff like that, but it seems so out of the blue that even if someone could pull it off, why? I wasn't acting scared or paranoid about anything paranormal the past few days before then, so it would be extraordinary to think that. Another thing is that no one in my family plays many jokes in general, and if they are, it's mainly just verbal ones, not physical ones. Since I was a kid, I've been a firm believer in the paranormal, spirits, and afterlife. I don't follow any specific religion. I believe that there are good and evil spirits, and that there could be a devil or God, but I try to stay optimistic. My old house used to seem haunted and have strange things happen to everyone who lived there, sometimes unnecessary things. But this happened at our new house as well, and we've lived here since I was around 10. Nothing else like that has ever happened here. I have no idea what it could have been to this very day. Hey there, Swamp Dweller. I'm going to share a disturbing story I had experienced during Christmas of 2020. A little something about me. I'm a 14-year-old girl, and I've always been shy. But my brother makes me scared, and I'm going to tell you why. Let's start the story. During Christmas of 2020, I opened my presents, and my dad got me a brand new Samsung phone. I told Dad that was too much and that my phone was fine. My dad said, okay, keep the new phone just in case. So I opened my mother's present, and it was a beautiful mint 1960s Raleigh bike in blue. I gave my mom a huge hug, but things took a turn when I opened my brother's gift. I noticed it was long brown hair. So I said, thank you? My brother gave me this evil grin. That's when I realized it was my hair. Goosebumps ran down my spine. A few months later, I was now in high school. The first day, I met a guy who turned out to be my EA. His name was Joey. We went to the classes I was going to be in, math and gym. I walked into the math class and noticed my brother was in the class. He gave me an awful grin, so I looked down because I feared him. So I went to my desk and started doing my work. An hour or so went by, and it was lunchtime. So I was outside and ate my lunch. My EA was standing nearby, and these teens walked up to me suddenly. And turned out it was my brother and his friends. Before I got the chance to say anything, my brother shoves me away, takes my iPhone 6. I watch him as he smashes it on the ground, bent the entire phone in half. And at that moment, I froze in fear. He walks up to me, picks me up, and throws me onto the ground. My EA ran over to me and breaks up the scene. They asked if I was all right, but I just huddled in a corner crying. I got a new phone shortly after, and everything has been somewhat normal again. I know the story may be a bit mild compared to most, however, this situation has caused me much distress and fear. Thank you for reading. I'll give you any updates about my brother as they come. Now, before I get into this story, you should know that I'm 22 years old, I'm a male, and I live in a large city in the Midwest. I drive for Lyft while putting myself through trade school. I drive for other similar companies as well, but that's beside the point. I have many horror stories from those as well, but I'll tell those another time. It was Christmas Eve, 2020. I was out running a Lyft for a few hours before heading to my mom's house with my new baby and wife. Nothing special going on for the night, just the usual. I get a ride request. It was a pickup from this kind of lower income apartment complex. No big deal. I arrive and I find my passenger. He has all of his belongings, several boxes of stuff. Now my car is a 2006 Chevy Impala, so it's not that big. We get all of his stuff loaded up. Barely, and are on our way. During the ride, he's crying, saying his girlfriend was cheating on him, and he had walked in on them earlier that night. He couldn't stay there because her name was on the lease, so I was taking him to a hotel. Now, in my city, we have a street that is well known for having vices. Hookers, drugs, gangs, weapons, and shady motels. The works. We get to the motel and he asks me to wait for him to check in and get his key. No problem, man, I say. I'll confess, I break the rules a little when it comes to Lyft. I have a gun hidden in a concealed holster secured to the underside of my driver's seat for protection. Reason being, driving Lyft and other contract apps, I've had knives and guns pulled on me, as well as people having tried to fight me, rob me, and all kinds of other things. But like I said, another time. This motel was on that street I mentioned before. Homeless people were everywhere. There was a dude on the far corner of the complex that still had a needle in his arm, passed out against the building. And I'm a big fan of true crime and horror narration, so I'm on edge. He gets his key, and the whole motel is ground level. So to help the guy out, I drive to his door. As I mentioned before, he had a lot of stuff. So, I started to help him unload his stuff. While on my second trip getting his stuff, I saw a guy come out of a room just to the south of my car, followed by two ladies. They came up to the room I was next to, not my passenger. One of the ladies pounded on the door, then opened it. That's when I saw the guy raise a shotgun up out of his long coat and storm into the room. The two ladies followed him, slamming the door behind them. Following, I heard a lot of yelling and shouting. I was just waiting for shots to ring out. Out of nowhere, my passenger comes up behind me. I can take this, man. Go ahead and take off. Have a Merry Christmas. And he gave me a cash tip. I didn't even notice he took the boxes out of my hands and slid a $5 bill in my pocket. I was honestly just frozen in fear for a moment. I knew what may have been going on in that room. I had to leave or at least get to where I could get my gun. I know the guy and both ladies saw me, and I knew, they knew, I saw the gun. I had to get out of there as quickly as possible. No witnesses mentality, you know? I got in my car and sped away quickly. I got a block away and called the cops. I gave them every detail. After I got off the phone with the police, I signed out of Lyft. I hadn't made much money anyway, but I was done. I got a call later that night. The cops investigated. They never found the gunman or the woman. Nobody ever answered the door that they knocked on, and the occupants of the room they went into said nothing had ever happened. But whatever. This is something scary that happened to me on New Year's Eve of 2013. That night, I accompanied a few friends to a restaurant and club downtown for a New Year's party. I had been feeling a little under the weather all day, but met them at the club regardless. Around 15 till midnight, I couldn't kid myself any longer and let them know I was heading home. The parking lot was very dark, so I pulled a small flashlight out that I carried with me. I usually kept it in my pocket and used it to light my path. As I turned the corner of the building, I caught notice of noise off to my left between two parked cars. When I reached the area, I shone my light onto the location of the noise and saw a man crouched over on the ground. I asked him if he needed any help with something, partly from suspicion, and he said yes. He claimed he had dropped his keys and could not find them in the dark, and asked if I could shine my light over to where he was to help them. Everything about the situation seemed legit, so I put my fears aside and began helping him. I crouched down next to him while he searched the area under the car. A few minutes passed and we were unable to locate the keys. Switching places with the man, I aimed the beam further and under the car. Doing this caused me to lean down further than I had to at that point. This is when I felt a hard crack against the back of my head. I remember the feeling of my face hitting the pavement, but that was all for a moment. I was probably only unconscious for a few seconds because I began waking up while I was being flipped over on my back. When my eyes opened, I saw a guy I did not recognize going through my pockets. He just pulled my wallet out of my back pocket and handed it to the other guy, the one I had been helping. Then, I watched as he pulled out my pocket knife out of my front right pocket and flicked it open. It had one of those assisted openings that makes it a little bit easier to open up real quick, kind of like a switchblade. He began waving it around in my face and asked me what my plans were for it. It was not a big knife or anything. The blade was maybe 3 inches long, and I carried it to use as a daily tool, like opening boxes at work and stuff like that. I had never viewed it as a real weapon until that moment. It was not big, but it was sharp enough to cut my throat. I could not say anything back to him. Even though I was now fully awake, I was too afraid to do anything. He continued waving it around and laughing. Fortunately for me, a group of men and women had just arrived and noticed what was going on. One of the men yelled out, "Hey, what are you dudes doing to him?" They must have been afraid of the number of people in the group and ran off down the street. A couple of the guys checked me out to make sure I was okay while the others called 911. The first responders arrived a few minutes later, and I went to the ER in the meat wagon. I was happy to hear I only had a slight concussion and would be allowed to go home later that morning. A female in the group had been kind enough to go into the club and tell my friends what had happened, and they arrived soon after I did. They cut me loose with nothing more than a headache. A few hours later, I got a ride home. I only spoke to the police briefly that night to give them a report, but it was not until the following day when I got any information. My knife had been found across the parking lot from where I had been assaulted, but I never got it back because it was quote-unquote evidence in an open investigation. They had also found my wallet down the street from the club, but nothing was in it. The iPhone I was carrying at the time never surfaced, but I had insurance on it and got another one. I still have no idea where the flashlight went to, and the two guys that assaulted me still have not been found, and I do not expect they ever will be. The incident had me pretty messed up for a few years, but I eventually realized I was still alive and that was the most important thing. Despite this, I will probably never be able to come to the assistance of another person I do not know without being very afraid. Just to be safe, I think I will mind my own business from now on. Better safe than sorry, you know? One little phone call can change a life. But for Karen Faulkner, 3 telephone calls changed her life in a way she will never, ever forget. 2 of the 3 were made within just a couple of hours of each other on the 1st of January, 1993. The first was from her mother, informing her that her older sister had gone missing after celebrating at a New Year's Eve party. The second was even worse news. The call came from her father, telling her a body had been found. Karen's sister, Kimberly, had been murdered. Over the next 18 years, Karen and the Faulkner family had grieved, come to terms with their loss, and eventually put it behind them. Until one fateful day, when the phone rang. The story of Kimberly Jean Duncan's murder is as random as it is horrific. She was a young woman, just 30 years of age. She was married with 2 young children in Aloha, Northeast Portland. She and her husband had been invited to a New Year's party. However, Duncan went alone because her husband had picked up a back injury and was immobilized with extreme pain. But as the night crawled into the wee hours of the morning, Kimberly had failed to arrive long after she was due to arrive home. Naturally, her husband began to grow irritated. It was not unusual for her to be a little bit late, due to drunken revelry and whatnot, but after hours and hours of unexplained absence, her husband went from irritable to downright worried. He grabbed his cell phone and began to call a few mutual friends who he knew would also be at the party. Eventually one answered, but his question on his wife's whereabouts were met with confusion. She had left the party hours before, sober as a judge, to get home for the time she had promised. Meanwhile, a stationary vehicle was spotted by a member of the public, parked in a neighborhood not too far from where Kim had been attending the New Year's Eve party. Initially, the person who spotted it guessed that the figure that lay motionless behind the steering wheel was just too drunk to drive and decided to sleep it off. But when the car was still there the following morning, they called the police. When the cops arrived, they discovered the slumped figure was dead. They had been shot once in the head at close range. Officers fished around the vehicle for some form of ID. When they found some, the name on the card was Kimberly Jean Duncan. After an impromptu autopsy, Karen Faulkner learned that her recently deceased sister had traces of narcotics in her bloodstream. This led local police to theorize that she could have been involved with violent drug dealers. That fact left Karen highly conflicted. Given that Kim had dabbled with drugs in high school, even struggled with addiction at one point, but had recently been telling her family that she was clean and sober. Despite her troubled past, Karen figured the best way to honor her sister would be to keep her memory alive. She needed to figure out what happened to her, and more importantly, who killed her. But when she called the Cold Case Homicide Unit to find out where the case stood, she discovered they had absolutely nothing. They also had a caseload of 273 investigations, with just 3 full-time detectives. Karen could do the math. They were hideously overloaded with work. Months later, Karen called again. Same status. She called again. Within the unit, she became known as a bit of a pest. On one call, however, she reached a detective newly assigned to cold cases. He told Karen to call whenever she wanted, and he would keep her informed of any developments. This kind of personal touch meant a lot to her. Her sister had been a living, breathing person, not an item that had been stolen or a piece of property that had been damaged. It was during one of these conversations with the new officer that she learned about a certain deck of playing cards. The unit sergeant had just come back from a national police convention, where he had learned that some police agencies were using the cards to solve cold case murders. Each card featured the victim's face, some details, and a number to call. The cards were distributed to jails and prisons with the hopes that an inmate might remember something. Faulkner made it her mission to get her sister's case on one of those 52 cards. She called, and she pestered, and she called again. When the first deck of cards was placed in Oregon's institutions, Duncan's case was featured on the 10 of Diamonds. 2 years later, an inmate was playing cards in Oregon Penitentiary. This inmate held the 10 of Diamonds in his hand. He read about the case, and by pure coincidence, something about it sounded strangely familiar to him. If he could provide the authorities with pertinent information, it could be a bargaining chip on his case. Authorities agreed to work with him. On pretense, they moved the man to a hospital, had him wear an undercover wire, and listened as he called his old friend to come see him. In the hospital room, he got his friend to talk about the case. Days later, authorities made an arrest. That is when Karen Faulkner received the third phone call. On the 15th of June 2010, Karen was driving on the freeway when her cell phone rang. The cold case detective told her to get her family together and come right away. "We walked into a room and everyone was standing and waiting for us," she said. The original detective who had worked the case was retired, but he was there. He had tears in his eyes. The family was told at 8:20 a.m. that very morning, authorities had arrested Brad Richard Ballantyne, a 37-year-old in connection with the murder. More than a year later, on Thursday, July 7th, Ballantyne pleaded guilty. The family knew who, but not why. Before sentencing, Ballantyne agreed to meet with the family in a jury room on the fifth floor of the Multnomah County Courthouse. "After all these years, we had the chance to confront him," Faulkner said. "He said he had seen my sister at the store when she was leaving after getting some cigarettes. She pulled something out of her pocket, and some money fell on the ground. He wanted to rob her. Brad Ballantyne wanted to get her out of sight, so he flirted with her and asked her to get in her car and followed him up the street. She was probably drunk," Faulkner said. "So, she did. Ballantyne parked his car in front of hers. He came back to Duncan's car. He said she got mad," Faulkner related. "I think she must have realized something was wrong. He said she was disrespectful. He walked back to his car and got a gun. He came back and shot her. He fled with $68. I'll tell you what I'll never forget," Faulkner said. "He told us she never saw it coming." Karen's father died a year later. Her mother is still alive. I wanted my parents to know what happened to their daughter, Karen had said. I wanted them to know the killer had been caught. She'd be proud of me, Faulkner said, admitting she still thinks of her sister often. She would have been as tenacious as I was if it had been the other way around. This happened on New Year's Eve 2016 in Ixtapa, Mexico. My family and I go there every year to spend the holidays since we own an apartment there, and it allows my dad to escape his work environment for a little bit. The apartment we own is an apartment complex that has 24 in total, divided into four towers. They all look the same and have a small terrace with a small hot tub in the corner. Since we have owned that apartment for a few years, my parents became close with a lot of the other residents, which created a nice environment to be during the holidays. Anyway, on New Year's Eve, we were invited with many of the other residents to spend New Year's at one of their apartments. Around 35 people or so showed up, if I had to guess. The apartment is on the fourth floor of the building, and we arrived there at around 10 p.m., since many of us had had dinner before with my family and joined to celebrate the New Year for the rest of the night. At around 10:50 or 11 p.m., one of my mother's friends looked up to the sky and said she saw something rather strange. Many of the residents, myself included, shrugged it off at first and kept on talking. Within just a couple of minutes, though, more and more people started looking up. Once we saw the commotion, we got up and went outside to the terrace to join them and see what the fuss was all about. It was kind of strange at first, but I can describe it as if the stars were twinkling. We could see stars, but these were bunched up closer than usual, and they were twinkling intermittently in an unusual fashion. As we kept looking more and more, these stars kept showing up and twinkling. Some were just saying that they were stars, and we were staring at nothing. But that's when we saw the stars begin to move in the sky. They weren't just twinkling now. They were moving all about. At this point, we all started to freak out a little bit. I like to think we are not alone, and that there are paranormal forces out there, but this was truly the first time I had no idea what was going on, or what I was witnessing. There were too many to count, but we all agreed there was around 100 to 150 quote-unquote stars that were twinkling and moving in one section of the sky. It was like they were all joining together, and once they stopped, they continued to twinkle in an unnatural way. I just can't explain it. It's as if it was turning lights on and off, and not the slight dimness you would see when it's an actual star. Then this entire cluster moved across the sky and disappeared. We were all just staring with our mouths wide open. Many of us tried to record or take pictures, but nothing shows up on the phone cameras, especially that far away. The fact that it was 35 or so people witnessing it, and only about an hour after we got there, means that we definitely saw what we saw. No one was intoxicated to the point to where they could have imagined it. The most interesting part is that the son of the apartment owner said that the year before he talked to a guy that said he had seen something similar on New Year's Eve the year before. He said he listened to the story but shrugged it off as some guy ranting. My family and I continue to talk about it to this day. We immediately tried to investigate phenomena or events that could have caused it, and nothing has come up so far. I'm not sure if anybody listening to this show has any information on this, but I'd love to share it anyway and see if somebody could provide some type of insight. Sorry for the long story, but that was the most concise way I could explain it. I know some people say these stories are true for immersion, but believe me when I say this is 100% true. Three of my friends and I were spending the night together on New Year's Eve about a year ago, and we decided we wanted to spend the night in a tent outside, really close to the woods. We were laughing and messing around, you know, normal teenage things. Then, we heard this rustling outside in the leaves. Figuring it was just an animal or something, We shrugged it off. At this point, it was nearing midnight, and we had a flashlight on in the tent and we were blasting music. That is when all hell broke loose. We heard this chirping noise outside. When I say chirping, I do not mean it sounded like a bird or a raccoon, but this unearthly chirping that did not sound like any animal at all. In fear, we were about to be ambushed. I demanded my friends temporarily turn off the lights and the music. At first, they looked at me like I was crazy, but I strengthened my tone. Turn it all off, now! At this point, they knew I was serious, so they turned it all off and listened. There it was again, this unearthly chirping that did not sound like anything. My friends and I were dropping bricks, but I was a little bit braver than the rest of them. I had been taking karate for about 4 years, and I am a very tall female capable of taking down a grown man. So I figured I could take whatever was out there, or at least I could carry one of my friends if we had to run away. They all tried to play it cool and said it must have been one of those screamer firework things, but I could tell they were all soiling themselves. We carried on screwing around for a few more minutes, desperately trying to forget about the screech chirping thing outside. Then we heard it again. This time, though, much closer to our tent. This was the first time I could properly hear it. When it made a clearer sound, reality drop-kicked me in the stomach. It was big, and it was almost right outside of our tent. My friends and I were about to freak out. So, they started asking me questions as to what I thought it was. I was the friend who was into all things paranormal, and I guess you could still say I am. But I have never been a paranoid person. So, they asked me. I told them, just as a suggestion, that it could be a skimwalker or a fleshgate, because I read somewhere that they like to mock the voices of your friends and like to emit strange noises. I only said this because I thought that might help them get over the scream chirp thing, but I think they were really scared. We heard it again. At this point, everyone was dropping bricks again, and one of them eventually called her older brother to come and hang out with us for a while. While he was there, just our luck, we could not hear the chirp screech anymore. Of course. We hung out with him for a while until we all decided to go on a walk with him. The walk was fun, and my friends were terrified because we were walking around in the pitch black. Oddly, maybe this is strange on my part, but I have always liked the dark. As it was so vast and mysterious, I was also low-key hoping we would find the flesh gate so my friends would stop acting like stuck-up little turds that weren't quote-unquote scared because I could see they were crapping themselves. Part of me was also pretty scared to see what would happen if we stumbled across a flesh gate. But her older brother had a knife with him, and I was prepared to stab it if he were not. Fast forward into the night. We were blasting music again and playing with a multicolored strobe light. Probably not the best way to avoid being jumped in the middle of the night. Now that I think about it, it was probably downright stupid to have it at all. My friend's brother had left us his knife in case we heard anything strange that night. It made us feel more comfortable. My friends all decided that I was the only one who would be brave enough to stab someone or something if it came down to it, so I oversaw holding the 6-inch knife all night. Thankfully, it was in a sheath, because despite my training, I am quite clumsy, especially this late into the night. I could not help taking the knife out of the sheath because it was so interesting and absolutely beautiful. There it was again. The same chirp screech. I unzipped the tent to look, knife drawn, and heard something scurry away quickly into the woods. Since my friends did not hear it, I left it alone and said nothing. Everything was fine for the rest of the night. That is, until I was the only one awake. I heard this horrible scream howl, much more blood-curdling than the chirps. It kept getting closer to the tent, and then backing away like it somehow knew I was the only one awake. It circled us, made itself sound more distant than it really was, then came back with another howl. One of my friends briefly awoke and told me it was probably someone having a party, but I could tell she was just saying that so she could get to sleep. Me, however, I could go for 3 days straight without having to sleep. I was perfectly fine without sleep unless I had a long day of school the next day or something. Believe me, when I say I did not let my guard down once, I listened to this thing in the location the cries took place. I was not about to let some flesh gate or whatever this thing was come and kill my friends and me on a night that was supposed to be fun. It's New Year's. We're not supposed to be scared, we're supposed to have fun. I drew the knife a few times and practiced slashing the air in case it attacked. But luckily, it never did. The thing just spent hours taunting me, trying to draw me out. I was incredibly tempted to run out there just to get a look at it, but I knew that is exactly what it wanted. Wanting for me to not be in a group so it could pick me off. There was no way, in frozen hell, I would let it anywhere near my friends. The older brother had left to go to a friend's house later that night as well, and the friend we were all staying with lived with her grandma. There was no strong men around. I lived around the neighborhood and both my mom and dad were home. My dad is a big guy, standing at 6'2", and strong as hell, but it would be too far to run. I could not go out there to see what it was, even if I wanted to. Even though I am fast, I was weak considering how late it was, and I would become this thing's prey easily. Knowing this, I just laid back, knife at the ready, listening in absolute horror. You do not know what true vulnerability is until you are on the outskirts of the woods in a tent with three lives in your hands, while some paranormal creature is hunting you, teasing you, and you only have one close combat weapon that you are not even certain will put a scratch on it. I sat there in silence until around 6 in the morning, when I was certain that it had stopped. I could not take it anymore. The thing had driven me absolutely insane. My work there was done, and I was certain it was gone. I left the knife on my pillow and a note that said I went home. I was not dead, so I could reassure my friends when they woke up later. I began to walk to my house, and to my house, the streets were poorly illuminated by street lamps. There were not that many, leaving a ton of dark spaces that I could not see even if I tried. To make matters 10 times worse, my glasses were smudged, and I could barely see a thing out of them. I knew it was better to my advantage if I kept them on, though, because I am blind as a bat. I scanned my surroundings my whole way there, keeping my eyes on every direction this thing could attack from. The thing was probably just waiting to get me alone, but I was not going to let it do anything to me. When I finally got to my house, the door was unlocked to my relief, so I could get in without my parents hearing me. Unfortunately, this was 5 in the morning, and as I mentioned before, clumsy as ever, I bumped into everything as I tried to navigate myself to my room, where I forced myself to go to sleep. After that, when asked, my friends would say it was a screamer firework or some animal, but I can tell they were just too scared to really face the reality. I tried to make sense of it, but I just could not. I knew what I heard, and I knew it was much worse than they could have imagined. They probably thought I mentioned flesh gates and skinwalkers just to scare them, but I honestly believe it was one of the two. Nothing like this has ever happened to me again, but there is a reason we have not been sleeping outside for quite a long time.